Brought to you by Black Knight, it's the technology.ie podcast, episode 46, for October 26th, 2012, with Michaela Nealon and Conor Muinichon.
Technology.ie is brought to you by Ireland's premier hosting and domain registration company, Black Knight. Black Knight offer a comprehensive range of hosting and domain solutions for businesses of all shapes and sizes, no matter where they are in the world.
Dias Mariv, agus kith fáilte roimhisteach. Hello and welcome to technology.ie, the podcast brought to you by Black Knight. I'm Conor Muinichon in the Edgecast Media Studios and at Black Knight HQ. Well, no, you're at your home, Michaela, are you this evening?
I'm at home, yes.
Yeah, not working late. It's late on a Thursday evening when we get to do these calls. I don't know about you, but I'm knackered.
I'm okay. I'm not too bad now. I'm kind of over my jet lag and everything.
When did you get back from Toronto?
Sunday lunchtime, thereabouts.
Right. And congratulations on your election, by the way, as something to do with registrars. What is the title exactly?
I'm now the secretary of the Registrar Stakeholder Group.
For ICANN?
Yeah, it's the stakeholder groups within ICANN are like the representative bodies for, well, various stakeholders. Yeah. And so there's a registry stakeholder group, a registrar stakeholder group, and there's various other groups there that, you know, have representation and everything else. And I'm now part of the executive committee for the registrars.
Have you held roles like that before with ICANN?
No, I've been actively avoiding getting elected to any role up until now.
But you've been involved in the politics, you've been involved in the campaigning, and you've been involved in representing your interests and the interests of registrars in general. So in a way, it's not surprising that that you're taking this step.
Well, no. I mean, the thing is that one of the handy thing about being involved in working groups and various other policy discussions is that, you know, you can kind of step back a little bit from it when you need to, or you're making a commitment, sure, but it's not as formal, whereas taking on an elected position either on the ExCom of a stakeholder group, the GNSO Council, or the NomCom, or one of the other groups like that, that is an actual, you know, real commitment, I suppose. Mm.
Anything else? Any other interesting news from the week?
It was a very, very busy week. According to ICANN, it was their second biggest meeting ever in terms of number of attendees. With it being in Toronto, of course, you know, you got all the Canadians, a lot of North Americans, and of course, you know, lots of Europeans. But I mean, you know, there's so many Americans, and it's easy for them to just to fly up. It's like an hour or two's flight from several of the major US cities. Fantastic event in terms of the organization by CIRA. They did some interesting things during the week in terms of, you know, holding events in various locations around Toronto. It was great. It was good. Lots of hard work as well, of course.
Good. And a few obligatory photographs at Niagara Falls.
Of course, yeah. Of course. I mean, if you're going to go to Canada, if you're going to go to Toronto, you have to go to Niagara Falls.
Now, I messaged you during the week, Michaela, and as you say, it was a very busy week for you. So we said, you know, I said, do you want to record this week? And you said, not a chance. Very busy as you were. And I was thinking of you last week because there was all kinds of tech news going on. But there's perhaps even more this week. The guy jumped out of the sky in a balloon with a parachute and spun around for a while and landed on his 2 feet on the ground, which was really extraordinary when you think about it. And, you know, kind of very basic from a technological point of view as well, but yet it had this extraordinary interest. Millions of people watched it live as Felix Baumgartner jumped out of whatever, 128,000 feet high. Was there much interest in that in Toronto?
Oh, yes. I mean, that was meant to have happened, I think, about nearly a week earlier.
That's right.
And they postponed it and postponed it and postponed it. And then he jumped, was it on the Sunday in the end? I'm trying to remember.
I think so, yeah.
Several of us were following that whilst we were in meetings, you know, with the audio turned off. And I ended up actually watching part of it on a friend's iPad.
Right.
I mean, that was pretty impressive.
In, term, in terms of events, I think that people sort of, and certainly from the point of view of the internet and that, I think it was one of those events that caught people's imagination as it happened. And there was a lot going on here in Dublin with the Dublin Web Summit. But as I said, you were over there, and we didn't really get to talk about it. Did it make any impact over there? Were there did we? I think we talked about this at a previous Web Summit that you noticed that you were talking to some people at. You were actually, it coincided with another ICANN meeting, now that I think of it, and somebody you were speaking to at an event last year was saying, oh, there must be something interesting going on in Dublin because a friend of mine is talking about this or tweeting about that or whatever it might be. Did that happen again this year, or was it just ho-hum?
Well, I saw quite a bit of activity on various social networks, but because of the time zone difference, not as much. Because I think last year I was in Senegal.
That's right.
So there was only, I'm trying to remember, I think Senegal is only 1 hour or maybe 2 hours time zones away, you know, right, time zones out from Ireland. Mm. So, you know, events going on in Dublin, you know, it's going to cross over with your working day in Senegal.
Not so much.
Whereas
in
Toronto, it's, you know, they're almost two separate days.
What I know, I had a busy week last week and I didn't follow it too closely, but I did notice the same kind of enthusiastic twittering and that coming from it as well. But what I noticed this year, I think, that wasn't there last year, was taking notice on the part of mainstream media. Paddy Cosgrave was a guest on Marion Finucane's panel, I think, the week before. And in fact, every time he turned on RTÉ News, they were broadcasting from the Dublin Web Summit, or they were either live from it or some package or piece that had been recorded at it. So it did seem to very much engage the interest of mainstream media this year as well. But other than that, nothing else too much, I thought, that struck me or that came up from it. I've been preoccupied this week, Michele, with the digital switchover. I don't know if you saw my... we talked about this the last time we were on, and, you know, you were wondering, was I going to get it together in time for it? You won't be surprised to know that I didn't get it together in time, and I tweeted on Wednesday morning. I said, right then, I said, I better see if I can get myself a set-top box before the kids get home from school. So as it turned out, I didn't, and I still haven't got a set-top box. I went into Tesco and they were all sold out. And so we are currently television-less. But I did what I promised to do, which is I took some redundant equipment from the office and I spent about 2 hours with it last night with my 8-year-old son giving me a hand and very interested in the whole thing. Basically, just trying to get it to work and see what I could do. I've got a TV tuner card in it. It supports DVB-T. It wasn't working, though, until I Googled and figured out what was wrong. I thought I might be able to get it to work with Windows Media Center on that computer, but turns out that it's an older version of Media Center and doesn't support it. So then I went and downloaded something last night called Media Portal, which is an open source Media Center, a version of Media Center or something like that, or a what do they call it? HT, Home Theater PC, or whatever it is they call it. And just... the latest I can say is that I have managed now to detect the channels, but they're still not playing for me. So having lots of fun in that respect as well. I also got a response from Air TV to my tweet on Wednesday. Have you come across, or no, on Thursday, wasn't it? Yeah, yesterday they turned it all off. Have you come across Air TV, Michele?
No, I don't know who they are. Sorry. They're
run by Magnet. I think Magnet are an ISP, a broadband provider.
Oh, yes. Weren't they doing some kind of streaming service?
They're streaming basically all of the Irish TV channels, all of the digital terrestrial TV channels, including the RTÉ2 high definition channel. They're streaming all of those free. They also have some packages. They've a few content channels of their own. They've got a what do you call it? They've got a couple of community TV channels on there. You know, the kind of thing. So they have a kind of package of free Irish channels that you can basically stream on a web page using Flash, and it's not bad. Not bad. Interesting enough. I played around with that, and they're kind of touting that as an alternative, or, you know, to buying yourself a set-top box or whatever. Now, I don't know, Michele, I've spoken before about the lady of this house and her her interest or lack of interest in technology, but she took a look this morning at what I had set up with Air TV on a Chrome browser running on a Windows Vista, I think it is, OS, on a pretty decent sized LCD monitor, which I'd set up in the kitchen, and shook her head slowly. It's not going to do, Michele. It's not the same as sitting down with a remote in your hand, you know, getting up, leaning forward to use the keyboard and the mouse and all of that. I don't think it's going to work. It's not going to fly with her. I'm going to have to buy a Servio box.
Well, off you go.
Yeah. I'll let you know how it goes.
Well, how much are the Servio boxes retailing for?
They're retailing for about €50, I think. You can get them for as cheap as. But I left it late in the day. When I started researching it then, you know, the guy was saying to me, you know, you can get a box with the free satellite channels as well, and a digital video recorder built in. And that, I think, for up to about 180, maybe €200, still pretty good value, I think. And I might go that way. But I'm playing around with this open source media center and kind of liking the look of it, you know. But as I say, it's...
Well, it depends. I mean, how many TVs did you have in the household up until now?
Well, this is the problem. I mean, we had two. We had one upstairs in the bedroom that we rarely get to watch, and we had one downstairs that had Sky. We turned that off, and basically we were just using a couple of free satellite channels and you know, and the digital terrestrial analog channels, and we were happy enough with all of that. You know, we don't watch a lot of TV, Michele. You know, the kids have their cartoons and stuff like that, and basically there aren't enough hours in the day for everything, you know. So, but I don't know. It's I'm going to have to figure it out, I think, in the next few days as well, because it's the ease of use of being able to sit down with a remote and press a couple of keys on it, and you're in business. That is what wife and children in this house like to see, I think. So there you go. Anyway, iPad Mini is out.
Yeah, I mean, it's not out. It's been launched.
It's been announced. Yeah. How many are we talking about here?
What do you mean?
How does it compare to the current iPad?
It's smaller and it's lighter.
Right.
I mean, if you look at there's a couple of other things. I mean, it's the usual kind of thing with Apple. You know, they talk it up quite a bit, and it's really a case of poking around and reading some of the more in-depth reviews to realize what exactly you're getting, what's new.
I liked your post on it, the obligatory iPad Mini launch post, as you said. And basically what you did was you summed up, and you've linked to, I think, a lot of the detailed analysis from the best business blogs and gadget blogs, really, on it, I think.
Well, there's no point in trying to do an in-depth review of something that I don't physically have.
Yes.
And other people are going to do a better job of reviewing it anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing that, you know, really caught my eye was the better Wi-Fi support. I mean, supporting 5G, that would make quite a big difference. I mean, the older iPhones only supported 2.4G, and I think it's the same with the older generation iPads. Because the problem I have is, of course, I'm still on a first generation iPad. I never upgraded.
Yeah.
I mean, it looks pretty cool. It would be, judging by the photos and everything else, it's about the same size as some of the Kindles.
Yeah, I mean, I gotta say, it doesn't look very mini to me. Now, again, when you compare it to an existing iPad, it's certainly a good deal smaller than that. But it's actually quite a useful size, is how I think you'd describe it. 7.9 inches, 1024 by 768 pixel display. It's a pretty useful size.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. I mean, what I was thinking about was, at the moment, when I'm traveling, I might take the iPad with me. But, I mean, physically, the actual size of it is, you know, it's pretty big. I mean, it's not much smaller than my MacBook Air. I mean, obviously, when you open the MacBook Air, it takes up more space because, the screen and the keyboard, whereas with the iPad, it's flat. So it's only just one plane, as it were. And, you know, I would use the iPad sometimes on planes for watching TV shows or movies that I've rented. This would probably be a little bit more convenient.
Yeah.
No, because, the problem I have, Con, is like you're on a long haul flight, and you know if you make the long, like I did to Toronto and back within the space of 10 days. So the movies that they were showing on both directions, they didn't change the programming at all. Yeah. So you'd already seen the films on the way out, and on the way back, it was like, well, what am I going to watch now? Type of thing.
How much do they reckon this is going to sell for?
I saw a few figures flying around, and it sounds like for once it won't make it that much of a difference whether you get it over here or if you get it in the US. I mean, there's going to be a difference in price, but it's not hugely different in price.
Are we talking about less than 300?
No, I think it's more than that. Actually, don't have the figures to hand, I'm afraid.
I'm not sure if they even announced it. They probably did announce it. Let's have a look and see if we can.
Well, I had a look. I've been looking at, say, on the Apple website. Let's try the US one to see if they've actually got pricing. Yeah. On the Irish one, they don't have pricing, which is rather annoying.
Right. Engadget reporting it's $329. As you say, we don't know what it is. There's no idea what that is in Irish terms.
Well, generally, what Apple tend to do is just do a one-to-one conversion.
Yeah.
Now, maybe they might change that around this time. Who knows? But, I mean, you know, price-wise and everything else. I mean, if you don't have an iPad, well, then getting an iPad mini might be an option. If you do have an iPad, I'm not sure why you would want to upgrade.
Yeah, I don't. And I'm definitely in the market for a tablet of some kind this Christmas, let's say, Michele. And this is attractive.
Is that a hint, Con, is it?
Pardon?
Is that a big fat hint?
Well, you know. No, but as I say, I'd probably treat myself, Michele. But either that or the Surface. I'm interested in the Windows RT is going to be announced. I think tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, that's okay. Due out. There's also I think it's the Nexus, the Google Nexus is also one that several people were talking about. I think they announced something as well earlier this week, or maybe I'm just imagining things.
No, there's definitely something about that. We're going to have to do a little bit more research and see, put together
our
Christmas list.
We're very badly prepared, aren't we, Con?
We're not, because, well, we are and we aren't. It's just that, you know the way we do this show, it's whatever kind of grabs us most. So what grabs you most this week, Michele? You pasted a whole load of stuff into our notes for this evening. What's taking your fancy?
Well, there's a couple of things that caught my eye. I mean, you remember we were talking about Facebook acquiring Instagram ages back. And it was, they were all talking about this $1 billion acquisition. It was, massive amount of money. Mm. VentureBeat had an article there a couple of days back, which was quite revealing. They're saying now that Facebook only actually paid $300 million for it.
Only paid $300 million in cash and the rest was stock. And that stock has dropped
quite a bit.
Indeed, it has. Yeah, indeed.
So I mean, what they're saying is, as such, the total aggregate value of the deal was $715 million at the time shares were issued.
Okay,
that's quite a bit below the $1 billion.
Yeah, yeah, and it's probably worth less now. Is that what they're saying? As the total aggregate value of the $715 million, is it? You said, yeah, at the time shares were issued. It's not quite the billion, as you say yourself.
Well, I mean, the thing as well is, their share prices haven't been exactly the most stable anyway since they started their IPO. I mean, if I'd bought shares in Facebook, I'd probably be quite upset with them at this stage.
Yeah. What's it at now?
I'm not. Let me just double check, actually.
Let's look it up.
Let's see. We'll use the power of the internets. It's down to 22.51.
It is from, what was it launched at?
It was, oh, let's have a look. Let's see. Trying to see where the actual high is. 1 year, 1 month, year to date.
And just while we're on it, Facebook shares post biggest single day gain. That's today's news.
Oh, really? Yeah. I mean, I can't remember what they actually started out at. I mean, they're not performing that well anyway.
No, without a doubt. $38 was the IPO price, so they're worth about what, 60% of that now currently at the moment. So, they're off 39% from the company's IPO price of $38 is where they're at the moment. But it's definitely a little rally there lately in relation to that. Google had some kind of disappointing share results as well there during last week, didn't they?
I mean, Google's been, you know, they've been doing really, really well, and now it looks like they're going through a bit of a rough patch. But I mean, you know, they're still making loads of money.
They still are, but not as much and not as fast. I think it was something like 11.3 billion in profits. I think that they posted, and it was something like. Or in revenue, I think it was, and the markets, Wall Street had expected 11.8 or something like that. And they're putting it down, I think, to the difficulty in making money out of mobile rather than out of the desktop advertising market.
So they're having the same problem as Facebook then?
Having the same problem as everybody, I guess, and it's the flight to mobile. Is interesting in relation to that. Also, I don't know if you saw those Chromebooks that Google have announced as well. Latest version of the Chromebook, I think it's for less than $300. And it is kind of interesting. Would you be interested in a machine that lightweight? It's essentially just a browser, really, more than anything else. A browser with some hardware attached.
No.
No.
I mean, the thing for me is, you know, I've got my iPhone, which I use quite a bit when I'm out and about.
Yeah.
I've got the Air, I've got my desktops, I've got the iPad. I've got enough devices, Carl, I'll be honest with you. I mean, sure, I wouldn't mind getting an iPad mini, but I wouldn't be able to just easily justify the upgrade. I mean, my current iPad would have to meet with a terrible, terrible accident. And even if it did, it's not as if I couldn't live without it.
I think this Chromebooks, they were marketing them as being suitable for given to the kids. Don't worry if they get knocked about a bit; they're not very expensive, and that's certainly one kind of use, I think, for that kind of a device. Let's move on. Let's look at some of the other stuff you've got. HeTexted.com. Now, I saw this mentioned during the week on Twitter, and didn't bother to follow up on it or find out what it's about. But you've posted it into our notes this evening, Michele. What's it about?
This is, I don't know, my sister, as you know, works as a producer on Australian TV.
Yes.
So some of the stuff she posts on Facebook and Twitter, it's in relation to stories that that she's doing research on. Mm. And she posted this a few days back, and I went onto it just out of curiosity, and I was like, whoa. What is it? It's basically a site where people can... where women can post texts that they've received from men, and, you know, get advice from people as to, you know, what on earth did he mean when he said that? And
it's funny. There's a format there. It goes, he texted me this, and then it lists the text exchange, and then the next part is, so now I'm wondering X. You know, so he texted me, for example, He texted me this, so it's about, for example, a date, about somebody goes to a date, and then afterwards the guy texts her three times and said, that was fun, and this dog is nuts. What's this about the dog? I don't know. This is the second one down on the list there. And a third text to say, can you let me know if you made it home okay? So now I'm wondering, says the girl, we had a really great time, we made out, what now? And then the people who view the site, you've got a choice of three buttons. You can click, he's into you, he's not into you, or the verdict is still out. So the audience, the viewers, the readers, the users of the site can vote one of those three options in relation to each text exchange. He texted me this, so now I'm wondering, what is it this, and is he into me or whatever, and people get to text whatever it is. It's a real kind of formulaic kind of thing, Michele, but it kind of works. It's that whole, and most of these are after a date, aren't they? It's like the follow-up text.
Most of them are post-date, post kind of interaction. I mean, some of them are quite amusing because it's obvious that, you know, the girl in question is not interested in the guy.
Yeah.
And she's trying to work out, you know, how on earth can she let him down gently?
Yeah.
Other ones, it's just complete confusion. You know, had this exchange of texts. I have no idea what the guy's going on about. But the thing that caught my eye initially was, you know, as a guy, you know, you're kind of brought up in a culture where, you know, men do not understand women, not the other way around.
Yeah.
So that there would be an actual website dedicated to deciphering texts from men, I kind of caught my eye. It's like, whoa, this is kind of bucking the trend a bit. But that's the other thing, the immediate question I had was, well, you know, where's the other version?
I mean, but I don't think there would be another version, Michele. That's the thing. I mean, I think we're much simpler in that, in general, we say what we mean and we don't analyse every word that women say.
But this is the thing, Colin, you see?
Yeah.
The thing is, normally you'd expect women to understand men, not the other way around.
No, they don't, because they overanalyze it, Michele.
Okay.
So the guy texts and he says whatever, and then the girl turns around and she asks 600 of her friends, and now there's a site dedicated to the fact of saying, what exactly did he mean by that? Should I read into this? Is he into me?
Well, there's going to be a version for deciphering texts from women.
Is there?
Yes.
So it's hetexted.com. I presume somebody's gone and bought
shetexted.com.
Let's see. Is it?
It hasn't launched yet. it hasn't launched yet. It's still in coming soon mode.
I don't see that there would be the same market for it. I think that women
come on now. You're not the demographic. You're happily married, for God's sake.
Yeah, but I mean, I think whether you're married or single, I think it's like, you know, it's like that famous scene in Friends, Michele, where Ross and Rachel have their first kiss, you know, and Rachel is describing it to her friends, to Monica and to Phoebe, and she's going, you know, and then he had my hands in my hair and all of this kind of thing, and it's all, and the girls are hanging on every word, and they get her to repeat it again, and they want to know every single detail, and then you cut, you've seen the scene, you know the scene, I presume, you cut over to the Joey's and what's your man's name? Matt LeBlanc. What's his name? Chandler's apartment. And Ross is telling the same story. And he says, and then I kissed her. And Joey goes, tongue? He says, yeah. And they go, cool. You know, and that's all. That's all the guys want to know. There's no overanalyzing.
Okay. I'm not going to get into this with you, Colm. I thought it was entertaining.
It's brilliant. I love it.
I thought it was entertaining. I thought it was kind of quirky and interesting.
No, it is. It is.
We're going to have to agree to disagree on whether there's a market or not for men.
Well, I'll tell you, I'd be interested to see if there is. And if there is, Michele, you can bring it up again and you can say I told you so. But I think what makes this interesting is that gender divide and the misunderstanding in the...
Abacon, we're not going to get into gender politics now, for God's sake.
No, it's just...
podcast.
No, I'm not making a political issue of it, Michele. It's the stuff of life. It's the fact that men are from Venus and women are from Mars, or the other way around. Or as my kids say, what is it? As the boys in the family say, women are. What is it? There's some
anyway,
story.
Anyway, moving swiftly on.
Sorry, moving we won't get into on. It. The boys in my family say that that girls are from the planet Jupiter, which I think is kind of mean, really. But
are we talking about your children?
You'll get that from seven.
Not your own siblings.
No. That's what you get. That's the kind of thing you get from 7 and 8 year olds. But you know something? I think all of us guys, Michele, we're just 7 or 8 year olds at heart, really. But anyway, let's move on.
We won't get into that either.
What have we got here? You've got a post here from Boing Boing in relation to the UK record industry. What's that about?
Well, this is all kind of comes back to the stuff we've been talking about quite a bit. I mean, about, you know, the ongoing battle between rights holders, the industry, end users, and everything else. And this time round, what the British Phonographic Institute wants is for UK ISPs to block a bunch more torrent sites. But what I didn't link to, unfortunately, I've completely forgot to. There was another report out somewhere else saying that, you know, this blocking of these sites was totally pointless and didn't work. Meanwhile, over here, Torrent Freak reported that UPC were blocking access to certain sites. Well, the Pirate Bay specifically. And that if users on UPC were trying to get to the Pirate Bay, they'd be met with this error message. But then turns out that wasn't true at all, because UPC issued a statement to say, no, they weren't blocking anything.
Aircom are blocking the Pirate Bay already, or are they? Am I wrong on that, I wonder?
As far as I know, yes.
Right. I'm going to have a look. I've never been to the Pirate Bay, have you?
Well, Con, what do you think?
I'm sure you have, in the interest of research at least. So the piratebay.se is the link. I've just searched it on Google. So the question is, can I access it? Ah, access to this IP address relating to the Pirate Bay website has been blocked, says Aircom. Why? And it refers to the High Court order on July 24th, 2009, requiring Aircom to block or otherwise disable access by its subscribers to the website thepiratebay.org and its related domain names, etc., blah, blah, blah. And that's basically it. If you're a customer with another operator, please contact your operator directly regarding this message. I'm not sure how you would see that message if you were a customer with another order another operator.
Well, that would probably be because I think it's done doing DNS. So it's based on the Aircom DNS servers, which would have the block in place there.
So am I right in saying Aircom were the only ones who kind of rolled over on this, and initially at least, but UPC hadn't, and then we thought they had, or have they? Which is it now?
UPC didn't roll over. That was the entire thing. So the Torrent Freak story was. I'm not too sure. I'm not even sure why they even posted that. Mm. Maybe they got their wires crossed. Maybe there was something else going on that led to an error being seen by somebody, and they jumped to conclusions. I honestly don't know. Because, I mean, Torrent Freak is usually a pretty good resource on these things. As far as I know, at this present moment in time, the only Irish ISP that is actively blocking access to the Pirate Bay is Aircom.
Okay, so I'm just looking at the Torrent Freak article here, and it's saying that there was definitely, this looked like an official notice saying the Pirate Bay has been blocked. The website is unavailable further to a request from IRMA. The Irish courts have ordered UPC to block access to the Pirate Bay website. However, as you say, it's not blocked, or it came back. And then further down the article, it says, update, the mystery has been solved. UPC says the blockade was just a test. The company does not explain why IRMA or a court order were mentioned on the redirect page. So it appears they were thinking of it. UPC's statement to Torrent Freak was, UPC Ireland's position has not changed. UPC is not required by any court or authority to block the Pirate Bay and does not intend to voluntarily block the Pirate Bay. Periodically, testing is carried out across our European network, which may have been observed by Irish customers. So what do you make of that?
Well, I mean, the thing is this. I mean, I was quite surprised that UPC would even have considered blocking it, because, you know, based on conversations and phone calls and other things and, you know, various other communications that I've, you know, been in with various people in industry over the last few years, it was pretty clear to me that UPC's position was, you know, they weren't going to do anything until they were forced to do something. And, you know, as far as I knew, they hadn't been forced to do anything. But, I mean, watch the space, because I think, you know, there's going to be more pressure coming to bear on ISPs, both in Ireland, the UK, and elsewhere. I mean, there was another story on one of the US sites there I saw in the last couple of days, where they were talking about some of the US ISPs being forced to implement blocks as well. You know, so the battle continues.
You see, it's very hard to see that this is in any way effective. People can find their way around it. Going back to the Boing Boing story about the UK blocking of sites, the Pirate Bay is blocked already. And as this story says, the Pirate Bay may be blocked, but the Pirate Party UK proxy for the Pirate Bay is one of the top 250 sites in the UK, and its popularity is climbing. So it's like whack-a-mole, really. You block a site and 10 more spring up instead of it. Let's move on. Go ahead, yeah. Sorry, McKinn.
You know, I mean, it's a general thing on blocking com. I mean, blocking access to content doesn't really work. It doesn't matter what the content is. You know, people will find ways to get around it. You know, that's the reality. You need to change other things rather than trying to block people in through other means. That's just not gonna work. Yeah, what was it? What else did we have in there?
Go ahead.
CFAX.
Yes. Yeah. And this is kind of interesting in the light of the analog switch off, because this was, of course, related to the analog switch off. And I didn't realize that, that as we were turning off analog yesterday in the Republic of Ireland, they were doing the same in Northern Ireland as well, many years after it was done in the rest of the UK.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either. But I mean, the CFAX thing was kind of interesting because you saw a lot of people posting kind of stories about, you know, the history of CFAX and the various services that were running on it. And I think somebody else had posted up quite an amusing screenshot. Now, whether it was genuine or not, I don't know, because I wasn't anywhere near an actual television. From the CFAX service kind of lamenting its own death.
That's right. It was a kind of a goodbye cruel world kind of a post.
I thought that was quite entertaining.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, it's you might as well have a bit of fun with these things.
Yeah. Yeah. Indeed. As apparently the Minister for Communications did with Miriam O'Callaghan on the air yesterday when Miriam was talking about tweaking rabbit ears being a thing of the past. And I think Pat remarked, did you hear this? Pat Rabbit, the Minister for Communications, remarked that Miriam could tweak his ears anytime she liked.
Oh dear, that's just not good. That's just not good.
Tell us, what have you got this week, Michele, at Black Knight? What are you selling? What are you promoting? What special offers have you got for the domain and hosting buying public?
Well, we've got our normal set of offers you can find over on domainoffers.me, but we launched a new offer this afternoon on .it domain names for only €6.99 ex-VAT for a one-year registration. You need a special coupon code, and if you head on over to the Black Knight blog, you'll find it there.
Cool. €6.99 for .it domain registration for 1 year. Nice offer. And transfers as well. Very good. Let's move on. What's this about ghosts, Michele?
This, I thought, have you looked at that yet, Con? It's just absolutely mind-blowing.
Oh, my God.
Absolutely mind-blowing. What this guy has done is he found a load of photos from the Second World War. I mean, you know, black and white photos, various different scenes, in different parts of Europe. And, you know, some of them were, you know, just, you know, soldiers standing around or walking through a town or whatever. Other ones were much more, how can I put it, much more moving and emotional, I suppose. And what he did is he went off and he found the locations the photos were taken today, you know, as in, you know, contemporary 2012 or whatever. And he took photos of all those places, same angle and everything else. And then what he did is using, I assume Photoshop or something like that, he merged the two together. So you have this really cool, interesting effect where you have the ghosts of these Second World War soldiers or Auschwitz prisoners or whatever, superimposed in a kind of, I don't know, ghoulish sort of way, kind of floating across the modern day image.
It's one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. It's on Flickr. It's a Flickr account. We're going to link to it in the notes with this on technology.ie as well, Michele. It is amazingly impressive and arresting because, as you say, he superimposed the same photo taken from the same angle in the same location now, and what is essentially, it's almost 70 years ago now since the Second World War. And you're looking at the same street escape now. You're looking at a scenario, for example, with Burger King and God knows what else shops, a scene of modern day peace and prosperity. And then, you know, superimposed in that are images taken from, in this case, the one that's grabbing my attention is from The Hague in 1945. Ghosts of War, The Hague, Welcome Tommies. And it's a tank. No, it's an armoured car. It's a Caterpillar transporter.
I mean, there's a load of other stuff that he's put together as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is just amazing. There's the Auschwitz photographs as well. Again, the same locations, the same scenes, but the individuals from that occasion, from those historic. Because it's no harm. I mean, Michele, it's no harm to remember, and this does it in a very effective way. Reminds you that this conflict and this unthinkable tragedy and horror happened on the streets of Europe, which is a very different place now, but still the same place, and still in many ways the same people.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's just looking at that one you chose, for example, the one of The Hague, Welcome Tommies. I mean you've got Burger King, you've got KFC, and then you've got this amazing black and white grainy photo and the image, whatever, coming out in the middle. It's just, it looks amazing. And yeah, I mean, it is, it's very striking. The comments are fascinating as well from some of the people who've posted up there on Flickr. You know, some of the people saying, you know, my grandfather was there, and, you know, it is visually stunning, and it's just absolutely fascinating.
Obviously not the same cretins that comment on YouTube videos then, Michele. Isn't it extraordinary the difference in the quality of comments between, say, something like Flickr? And you often see this, especially when people put up historical photographs or family photographs or whatever it is. You get thoughtful, sincere, heartfelt, meaningful comments, and then you get something put up on YouTube and it's all abuse and ignorance.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing that the quality of the comments on YouTube always amazes me. I mean, at least, you know, they have the thing where people can vote stuff up and down a bit. Yeah. So, you know, some of the worst stuff will disappear. But yeah, generally speaking, the comments I see on Flickr are usually much more, you know, positive, or I don't know, mature or something.
You posted a link that looked good, and I tried it out. A bit of video fun, you've described it as chaosinyourtown.com, and I know the kind of thing it is. You go to it and it asks you to put in your surname and your street name, and I presume that there's going to be some kind of a customized news report or something like that. But when I clicked on it, it doesn't work, Michele. It prompts me for the details to customize this video or this experience for me, but it didn't work for me when I tried it earlier on this evening. Could it be down for a while or something?
I'm just trying it now. It's actually loading for me. It's loading now. The problem I found with it is, it's, sorry, I just brought it up there now so I can actually try it.
Okay, let's hear it.
The main issue with it is that its address matching isn't exactly fantastic. But if you can find an address that will work with, it is pretty cool, because it uses Google Street View to kind of superimpose this crazy robot going around the place and, you know, attacking things and throwing cars around the place and everything else. But I just thought, you know, it's a bit of fun. It's using the Google Maps API. It's using Google Street View. It's just always an interesting use of technology.
Oh, so it probably wouldn't work. It probably doesn't work so well with people who are living in rural West Clare. Maybe that's part of it.
Can't. The correct word is out in the sticks.
Out in the sticks. That's right.
It doesn't work too well in Carlow either, admittedly. But I mean, I just thought myself, you know, it's an interesting concept. It probably works really well if you're living, you know, slap bang in the centre of a major town or city.
Mm. A couple of other things you blogged on the site during the week. LG uses scare tactics to show off tech. This was cool. These high definition monitors, which basically they were kind of trying to highlight in particular the color in these, that it's so realistic. And they did something cool when they embedded these monitors in the floor of an elevator.
Yeah, this again, it's kind of quirky. I mean, it's cool, but it's quite quirky because they basically replaced the entire floor of the lift with monitors.
They did, yeah, and they put in speakers as well for sound effects so that basically you got into the lift, the doors closed, you press the button for your floor, and what happens then?
Well, then the floor of the lift basically falls away. I mean, it breaks. So as you're going up or down on the lift, the floor breaks underneath you, or at least it appears to.
Yeah.
And it's quite funny to watch the reactions of people because it looks so realistic that they all kind of jump back.
I wondered if they were in on it, though.
Hard to tell.
Or, or perhaps they were told to expect something when they got into the lift. Because I imagine if you got into a lift and all of a sudden it starts to creak and groan, and the next thing you see the floor panels falling away underneath you, I can imagine you'd... You know, they could find themselves with a cardiac emergency on their hands, you know.
Well, this is it. But I mean, at the same time, I just thought, you know, it's quirky. It's a little bit different.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how do you make, you know, monitors interesting? I mean, you can't. I mean, they're monitors, for God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, this is the problem we always have with technology products. I mean, there is a kind of a certain wow factor with something completely new. But when you've got something like the computer monitor, I mean, one computer monitor versus another, you know, how can you actually show to somebody that your technology is superior?
Well, certainly it was a good effort, and it is an entertaining video, and it's blogged on the site at technology.ie. Finally, Michele, you blogged the Mac Heist bundle has been announced. Tell me, what's this about?
Well, this is something that they've been doing now for the last... I think it's like 3 or 4 years. There's a lot of sites out there that do software bundles. I mean, a lot of them do for the Mac. I think there might be ones for Windows as well. But I mean, as a Mac user, I see the Mac ones more. What's interesting about the Mac Heist stuff is that they bring together a very good collection of commercial software at a knockdown price. So you could get, say, $500-$600 worth of software for like $30. But what makes it all the more interesting is that a percentage of the money, percentage of the money goes to charity. So like, let's say if you pay $40, you're actually helping charities out in the process. The current Mac Heist bundle finishes, well, actually probably finished by the time this podcast goes out. But I thought, you know, it is cool. It is interesting. It's something that I sign up for often because it might be out of, say, 20 apps that they might give you. There might be one in there that's worth it. But apart from anything else, you know, you're actually giving to charity. But you're getting something back as well. So, you know, it's good fun.
It's marketing and it's good fun and it's for a good cause as well. All right, Michele. There was one other thing you wanted to talk about this evening. The .me comedy cage match.
Yeah, well, it's not just the .me comedy cage match. I mean, I posted earlier this evening on internetnews.me that the .me registry has reported that they've broken the 650,000 domain mark, which means, which is, you know, it's pretty damn good in terms of domain growth. But they're also the fastest growing country code extension in Europe. But at the same time as that, they're also involved in a whole load of marketing things via both Facebook and Twitter. And the most recent one of them is this comedy cage match. So if you actually follow the link to it, what you're getting is they've been running this now for the last, I think it's about 2 weeks. And it's been these stand-up comedians, and you get to vote on them. At this stage now, they're down to the last two, I think. And you get a chance to win something, and of course the comedians get a chance to win something. But it's a bit different. I mean, this is a domain name registry that's using Facebook, and social media to market in a pretty interesting and original way.
It certainly is. So you click through on that link and you go to a Facebook page that they've set up for it, and you've got to like the page so you can vote, and then you can choose from then vote on the comedians, isn't that it?
Yeah, but I mean, they started off with, you know, a bunch of comedians, and as the rounds progressed, they've it's been reduced right down. So now I think it's down to the last two.
It's interesting. I know, Michele, I think we've talked about this before, and I don't come from the same place you do in relation to the interest in domains. I understand that it's a professional interest, but I think you're interested in the marketing and how people do it and how the whole business and sales in relation to it as well. And obviously, the whole notion of there being a scarcity of certain types of domains and certain types of domain extensions and all of that as well. And I often think that for a lot of people, it's very hard for them to get excited about domains and get interested in domains. But that there is to an extent a challenge there for registries in terms of promoting themselves. But when it comes to creativity and innovation, these .me guys have a pretty good handle on that, I think, don't they?
Oh, they do. I mean, they do. They've also launched a video, which I linked to in that blog post. You know, this entire kind of this corporate guy video. And the entire message they're trying to put across is, you know, .me, it's a personal domain name. It's for you as a person. You have to get away from the idea of the big business. It's back to the individual and everything else. You know, I think what they've been doing in terms of their marketing is just absolutely amazing. I mean, they keep on coming up with new ways of pushing it. I mean, it's the same with the guys on .co. You know, both of them, both of those companies do interesting things.
And as you say, it's certainly showing results as well with their passing the 650k domain name mark. So well done to them. Michele, I think that's about it for this week.
It is indeed.
Thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
Same to you, Con.
Slán go fóill.
Slán.